You're listening to Creative Thursday, episode number 180. Welcome to Creative Thursday with Marisa Ann Cummings. We're talking all things life, business, and creativity intended to inspire and empower you wherever you are on your creative journey, both personally and professionally. Thank you for listening. Hi, hello, it's Marisa here, and I am recording this intro on Earth Day of 2020, so if you happen to hear a little bit of background noise more than usual, maybe some birds singing, it's because I have the window open, and right now, in this moment, I just want to appreciate the stillness that has been, well, not planned upon in my city of Los Angeles, but it is here. I want to capture it for a moment and also capture the incredible fresh air and take note of the gentle healing that is happening on our planet, in particular on this Earth Day. I know this isn't what we'd envisioned in terms of bringing some relief to our planet. But as I was just writing in an Instagram post, it is a silver lining that's happening right now. And I want to just address it here for a moment to say that as we begin to ramp up again, I can only hope that we can bring some of the mindfulness that has come to us in this unexpected pause and bring some of that back to our new normal. And it's interesting, today I have a very special guest that I can't wait to share with you. And it's interesting to share this conversation with my guest at this time because we recorded this shortly before all of the COVID-19 pandemic began. And my guest, Alyssa Van Gilder of Apotheca Flowers, her business is looking very different than it did just 5 weeks ago when we recorded this particular conversation. And one of the reasons that I am looking forward to sharing it with you now, well, two reasons. One is watching Alyssa maneuver through this time with her business with so much optimism and continued heart and just a willingness to pivot and adapt and be nimble and move quickly is A, not only a testament to her vast business experience. She has been a business owner. She's had Apotheca for 15 years. And what really stands out to me as I listen back to our conversation now is that her mission and her values and her integrity and care with which she has always run her business, because this is the kind of person she is, that core is really shining and rising up in a crisis. I think it's incredibly fascinating right now to not only observe what's coming up for me, but also to observe artists, leaders, mentors, spiritual teachers, fellow small business owners, and just observe how everyone is handling this. How will all of this shake out? Even speaking about the mindfulness at the opening regarding our planet, I don't have all of those answers, but I know that I'm asking the questions. I know the answers will come. I know that I'm setting a powerful intention in place. And I know, and I am optimistic, I know that it's all going to come together again, and we're going to see a lot of beautiful evolutions out of what is feeling like an incredibly uncomfortable time. I have a lot of optimism for what the future holds, and I really feel inspired seeing the businesses with heart, with genuine care. You know, there are a lot of people out there with a lot of lip service, but when the going gets tough, that's when you see the true essence of people. It's easy to show up well when the going is good and quote unquote expected and seemingly certain. But what happens when the bottom falls out? Are you still going to show up powerfully for the people that you claim you care about, for the people that you built a business to serve? It's a valid question. And thankfully in my world, I see a lot of inspiring people doing just that. And it motivates me to keep doing the same. And I continue to have a running thought bubble, a running thought river of ideas of how I can continue to help you, not only just in this time, but just how I can continue to be better going forward, how I can infuse more heart into my business, how I can infuse more knowledge into the world that will help you make it through this time, other times, and also through the good times that we will be seeing again, and even if you can, finding now. And the opportunity for me, this is a perfect example of a good time happening now. Alyssa and I originally came together, and you'll hear us reference it in this conversation. We had planned an in-person floral design and painting event. It was a 3-day event. You could choose to join us for one day or all three. Creativity with a special focus on supporting and inspiring and nourishing the creative business owner, because Alyssa also coaches small business owners, helping them build their own floral design business. And we were so excited to host this event. It was going to be here in Los Angeles, and needless to say, at the moment, it is all on pause and we're not coming together in person. However, and take note, put this in your pocket so you can remember if you'd like to join us in the future, our event is not canceled. It is only postponed. And as soon as we get the all clear to mindfully come together again, the event will be back on. But what we've chosen to do in the meantime, to take care of the attendees who are planning to join us this weekend, and to invite you, if maybe you wanted to come but weren't able to come, or maybe traveling to LA just wasn't something in your plans for this year, even before this happened, we have decided to pivot this event, a portion of it, because we're not doing all 3 days. We're not even doing a full day, but we have decided to take a portion of this, almost like an intro to the event, and bring it to you virtually with a floral design and painting workshop. And if you know me and you followed the podcast for a while, you know I've done this before. I have taught creatively live painting. I have been teaching live and online for many years, so this feels totally doable. And while we would appreciate being together in person more than ever, I imagine, sharing some brunch, some lunch, a glass of wine under the avocado tree. Oh, it sounds so good, doesn't it? We are going to do our very best to bring a glimpse of that, a sliver of that to you in the comfort of your home. And through the process of all these shifts and changes happening in the economy and with Alyssa's business, as I mentioned, she got on the online side of her business, something she'd been meaning to cultivate sooner. She got on that faster because her brick and mortar flower shop is closed, all of her weddings, events, plans were also put on pause. And so she had a moment with her team to put together the online component of her business. In fact, I am so excited. I just ordered plants from her. People are buying plants. People, people are buying plants. As you can imagine, we want the greenery. Some of us may not have access to it as readily as we used to. We want clean air in our home and just plants. Plants are where it's at. So you can purchase plants from Alyssa. She got the shipping set up this week. I just did that myself. And she is now able to ship, and well, is starting to. I don't know if she has the full floral design shipping component of her business in place just yet. When she does, I know you'll want to order from her. But she is ramping up to that, and one of the ways she's doing this is by shipping us a kit. She does have kits available. I know that for sure, for certain. She is going to send everyone in the workshop within the lower 48 states. I must clarify, I can't go to Alaska or Hawaii or overseas or Canada just yet, but that will be coming. But for this workshop, she will be sending flowers and a kit to work with. So we'll all be working with the same flowers, and then after she shares her pro design tips with us, I will be sharing and teaching painting using the floral design arrangement as inspiration. So we're very excited about this. This may be something that we can continue to do, but one step at a time, one day at a time. I know most of you may still be at home, so hopefully this isn't a schedule conflict. If you have kiddos at home, they can certainly join in with you as well. And so we are happy to announce that. You can get all of the details if you would like to join us at the bit.ly, the famous bit.ly link, bit.ly/virtual. I don't know why I'm tripping over my words today. V-I-R-T-U-A-L. Virtual floral. bit.ly/virtual floral. I will also be adding a link at creativethursday.com and creativethursdaycourses.com. We moved super fast on this. That's how we do. We are experienced entrepreneurs, and we know how to show up in a crisis. We do. It's been a real, where I was saying earlier, a blessing in this time is connecting with Alyssa, not only as we were planning our in-person workshop, but she's been an unexpected great support and friend and fellow business comrade during this time in particular. So I also want to say thank you to her for that. And we met originally at the Tribe Conference last August. As you'll come to recognize, a lot of my current friends and business circle are from that wonderful experience within that community. I'm endlessly thankful for all the support I've been given, for all the guests who have come on to the podcast. There's a reason that we connect, and it's because we have a shared passion for making an impact and helping people, quite honestly, helping people. And we are willing to, we still go through the discomfort sometimes, we really do, the awkwardness of it all. I think this might be one of Alyssa's first podcast recordings. But besides our fears, or in spite of our fear, we show up anyway. That's how much we care. That's how much we are dedicated to the people we serve and the businesses we are building and the teams that we are building and our families and everybody in the whole big, great world. We want to help everyone. So for now, we want to just inspire you again, share another story of a fellow creative, completely different expression, although I know Alyssa is also a beautiful painter as well, but she chose to channel her creativity into floral design. And I know that this time for her, she shares a similar approach and attitude during these very unprecedented times. She is looking for the possibility, for the silver lining. She is looking for new ideas that may be born out of this time, or that will lead her business into inspiring new directions. And I know that a big part of that will be helping more people, coaching more people in business, and I can vouch for the fact that she's really, really good at that. She has a lot of experience. So without further ado, I invite you to enjoy Alyssa and my podcast conversation pre-COVID-19. It started pressing record. So let's start with, I think this is it's a wonderful place to start because I've heard you mention it a number of times when you talk about the fact that a lot of us end up spending, you know, being very inward and related to, but not necessarily related to being an introvert. Although I think most creatives probably fall into that category. But I was hoping that you would expand a little bit more on what does that mean for you when you think about a creative and how we tend to isolate more.
I know for me personally, part of my creative process involves me being alone. You know, I think a lot. I like to journal. I like to sketch. I like to map things out more in an independent, you know, kind of solo way. And that's when thoughts come to me, like when I'm, you know, out on a run or I'm hiking or I'm sketching or I'm driving. Like driving's a great time for me to think. So because that's a natural part of my creative process, I can get really lost in just that alone time. Now, the flip side is I have 4 children. We have an in-law apartment.
I was just about to ask, you're reading my mind. Alyssa, how do you do that with 4 children? Where do you find alone time and your business that we will be going into shortly?
So they're all in school now. So my oldest is 18 and he's about to head off to college. He's a senior. And then our youngest is in first grade. So they're all in school all day. And I do try to work from home, you know, a couple days a week. And then I work in the shop and then I'll work in the design space. But I've really built it into my days. It used to be that I only had alone time on Wednesdays when I would get up at 4 in the morning and go buy flowers. I'd go, it was about an hour drive, and I'd go buy flowers. And that was my favorite time of the week in a lot of ways because I had the drive there to myself, and I would, and still now I drive to Rhode Island to get flowers during wedding season. And I drive 2 hours in complete silence because I need that time to just connect with myself, find my thoughts, remember that I am my own person. Because I think when you have a team and you have children, it's really easy to get lost in these people that we care about. And I have a customer base that I adore. I have customers that have become part of my family. So I think a lot of artists are empaths. We want to use our art form and our medium to serve others and to feel that we're giving to other people in a really positive way. And we run a risk of just becoming really depleted. So it's always been important to me to find those quiet ways. I take a bath every single night with essential oils. It doesn't matter if I'm working really late in a project and I get home at 1 a.m, I take a bath every night. And that's another opportunity for me to just be still and to literally feel my breath. I'll sometimes put my ears underwater just to hear myself breathe. And these are things that have just become part of my life that I really feel like there's something missing if I don't do that. And the introvert piece, because it's a part of who I am, it's a part of how I create. Creating is an incredibly important part of my life and has been since I was a little girl. But the creation piece, you know, I want to create to make an impact in my world and an impact on the lives of people around me, whether I know them or not. We have people that come into our space, into our shop, and there's something really special about sitting back and watching them from afar. Not to sound creepy, but watching them from afar and seeing them come into the space and be, you know, sort of they're inspired and you can see it. You know, they're walking around and they're looking at things and they're being drawn into the space. And that's the purpose of Apotheca. We want people to walk in. We want them to feel important. We want them to feel inspired. We want them to feel uplifted. And we want them to leave our space and go into their day feeling better. whether I personally interact with them or not, I want to know that my team and just the elements that we put within our space are serving, you know, every single person that comes into the door.
I'm really, that is just so beautiful. It's just,
thank you.
We have talked at length before, and as you know, and as my listeners know, I say the same thing even with this very podcast. So now you have two people on one episode who are hoping that by the time you come to the end of this episode, you feel better than you did before. And it's a similar goal for me, which is why I'm also so excited to be collaborating on our upcoming workshop together, which we'll get to shortly. But I feel you gave such a powerful intro that for people who don't yet know about you or have the opportunity to visit your beautiful shop in New Hampshire, that you share a little bit more about Apotheca, and if you would like to also share a little bit of backstory as to how that began.
Yeah. So I feel like my story, I mean, all of our stories, they start in childhood. And for me, I was born in Alaska. My parents lived in a very rural, tiny town. I don't even know if it's really a town. We had, I think it was 120 people. And they were in the military. They moved to Cantwell, Alaska. That's where I was born in Anchorage, moved to Cantwell with them. They ran a lodge right off the Denali Highway. And I didn't have electricity for, you know, a lot of my childhood. We had an outhouse. The nearest actual store was 4.5 hours away. So my parents lived a very alternative life. It was a very creative life. We found play in different ways. I remember going to the dump with my dad and being so excited because I would find various treasures and I'd bring them back and just make things out of them. I remember walking in the woods and finding pieces of bark and bringing them back and making them into mermaids with yarn. And just, you know, I remember the moment when I first said to myself, I want to be an artist when I grow up. So obviously at some point I discovered what an artist was, but I remember those early years and just having so much fun taking an object or taking something and turning it into something else. I was also homeschooled, so we didn't have formal art classes, but creating was very much a part of our lives. My mom, even with her cooking, you know, everything was from scratch. She would just, you know, bake bread, and everything was kind of an alternative approach. I didn't know it was alternative at the time, but then obviously growing up, then I started to realize how different our lifestyle was. When I was 10, we left Alaska and moved to Minnesota. And in many ways, I've actually likened it to probably how an immigrant would feel moving from a different country into the United States. We didn't understand style. I didn't understand what most of the kids were talking about. I didn't understand the importance of clothing and fashion and a lot of kind of material things. So the kids I ended up connecting with were kids that were also creative, that just enjoyed making things. And but one thing that I took away from my childhood in Alaska was watching my parents create community around them. So even though it was a very small town, people would pass through because the Denali National Park was close. So we would have people come into the cafe. My dad was incredibly friendly. I would watch him make friends with almost everyone. And there was something powerful about having my dad welcome these people into his cafe, having these conversations with them, and just seeing them feel happier when they left. And I really loved watching my dad do that and kind of make that magic happen. And then in the town itself, my dad started something called the Cantwell Spring Rendezvous, where he would bring people from sort of far, you know, villages and cities and towns from farther away. They'd gather together in Cantwell and they'd do all sorts of very strange winter activities, like barefoot races on the airplane strip. They'd do muzzle loading contests and trap setting contests, very Alaska things, a dog sled race. but it was that sense of community, something happening somewhere where people are coming together and just celebrating being alive. And this is where it gets really bizarre. There was something called a buffalo roll that would happen at the end of the festival, where people would get naked and then put on a buffalo skin and roll through the fire. And I hesitate to tell that part of the story, but it was crazy. It was absolutely just crazy. But there was just this
people
magic.
Loved it, right?
People loved it. There was this magic that happened, you know.
And this was all in Alaska still.
This was all in Alaska. I know I skipped around there. I'm sorry. This is all in Alaska. Okay. But it's like that. That is where I learned the magic of community. And these are people coming out of hybrid. Nation. You know, they're basically in rural Alaska. They're not going to leave and venture through the tundra for anything. But then the spring rendezvous comes about and they've got a little spring fever and they want to gather together and just be together and commune and have fun and do crazy things like the buffalo roll.
This is your first podcast, we should say. This is
a yeah, so I'm sorry
very
for
first podcast, yeah. And this is my very first time, as I'm sure for many, hearing about the buffalo roll.
So I feel like we're imprinted as children with a lot of things that just stick with us.
Yes.
And adulthood is, yeah, in adulthood, we're working out those impressions. We're understanding, of course, the hurtful impressions, but also the inspiring impressions, trying to understand why it impacts us and how we make sense of it in our adult lives. So for me, it was creating things out of the dump, creating community, and blessing other people with my life, feeling like my life can make others feel better in some way. I love bringing joy to other people. So fast forward to 2005, I find myself the mother of two young children. I'm getting a divorce and I'm faced with needing to figure out how to support myself. At that time I am still an artist, but at that time I was a painter and I had a gift line that was sort of on the back burner because I had two kids that I was taking care of and doing my artwork around being a mom. But suddenly I had to kind of hit fast forward on my plans for my business. And I opened a brick and mortar shop. It was very much, I was terrified, but it was very much a do or die scenario. I knew I wanted something that would fulfill me as a creative being, that would allow me to be a mother to my children and that could help me to provide for my children. So I opened Apotheca in 2005 and it started as a flower shop, and I had a tea chest. I called it a tea chest. So it was essentially a tea bar and a flower shop with some artisan gifts. Then in 2008, we moved into a larger space, which is where we are currently. It's an old train station. And we expanded into a coffee bar and an art gallery, which was always a part of my original plan, just because of how a coffee bar can really bring community together. And celebrating art and artisans, you know, I have always had a vision for bringing artists together and celebrating their work and recognizing how isolating being an artist can be, because we do work in those quiet places, but it's so important for us to be able to come together and collaborate. And that's what Apotheca really became as I was able to expand into a larger space. And then something that happened that was really unexpected, we started doing a lot of weddings, and I had a business plan that was 30 pages long, and nowhere in that business plan had I thought about doing weddings. And suddenly that was becoming a very large part of our business. And at first I steered away from that. But then as I got to know our couples and I really started to understand how we could bring flowers and design into their wedding day and really celebrate who they are as a couple, it just became something that I've completely fallen in love with. And, you know, I can't imagine Apotheca without it now.
So specifically, are you doing the entire event or just focusing on the floral? Because when you're mentioning design, what does that include for the wedding?
So it is the floral piece, and we will work with our planner and we'll work with the other vendors in the wedding, but we are primarily focusing on the floral piece. And so for us, we do a lot of installations. So we'll have, you know, florals hanging from the ceiling, or we'll do grand floral entrances. So it's more for us, it's typically more than the flowers on like centerpieces alone. There's typically more happening with our clients. So it becomes creative artistic expression where flowers are our medium. We're really creating in some cases things that feel like sculpture, but we're doing that through flowers, and we're doing that through the filter of our couple getting to know who they are and how we can best bring their vision to life. And it's something that we really enjoy.
Oh my goodness. So many places in that story that I want to come back to. And thank you for sharing all of that with us. It makes perfect sense when you weave it together. And I just recently learned that from age 0 to 7, that's when our subconscious mind is formed. So when we talk about the imprinting, that is such a special time for everyone. And I also appreciate that you mentioned not only, you know, I think a lot of us are recognizing whatever kinds of traumas might have come up at that time, but really paying attention to what inspiration happened during that time that stuck, and recognizing how that influences you in opening to the work that is the most meaningful for you. That's always been a question I've had, is how did you decide? Was it purely the business standpoint of flowers, or how did you lean, if you were painting before, how did you really lean into flowers being your, you would say, is that the best way to describe it? I mean, flowers are your main focus within Apotheca.
Flowers are, I feel like our main focus, I mean, our mission is acknowledge, lift, inspire. So our main focus really is fulfilling our mission, and we're a business. So the way that we fulfill that mission is through flowers primarily. So it's really funny, because when I first opened Apotheca, flowers were actually a very small part of my original vision. I wanted it to be about community. I wanted it to be about artisan gifts with flowers and plants. And the flower piece really took off, I think, because we have a different approach to design. And that was something that resonated with the community, and word spread, and that became something that really took over the other parts of our business. And I think it's important to remember that businesses really, they are their own being. they end up taking on their own shapes, and we can try to nurture that and direct that, but we also have to pay attention to what's working and what we need to nurture and what we need to let go. And that was definitely something that was true with Apotheca. And the flowers, I've always gravitated towards flowers because they remind us that life is fleeting, life is beautiful. They're a way to communicate with others without words. You know, they transcend words in many ways. Through flowers, we can say, I'm sorry. We can celebrate. We can remember a loved one. So I felt like, you know, the flower piece is something that I leaned into because it became a way for me to really fulfill my purpose, for me to really sort of nurture and give back to my community and become a part of their lives in just a really beautiful, intimate way.
So let's talk about how you knew to write a 30-page business plan. And then I also want to explore this idea that you brought up about knowing how to intuit when to make those shifts. And one of the reasons I get to, or am also so excited to ask Alyssa about this, is that she is a wonderful business coach, and we will be coming to that part of the journey even more. But being a part of your life now and listening to how you're helping others to build a business similar, or to build just their own creative business, did that just come to you, or how did you know to do this?
Okay, so you have to back up and ask me what your first question was.
My first question is, I'll break it down in two. One. I know I always add on a lot to my question. Number one is, how did you know to do a business plan, a 30-page business plan?
So the business plan. The business plan was actually something that I did because I was hoping to go to the bank and get funding. And that was a hilarious joke, because when you've been a stay-at-home mom and you've not built credit and you've not, you know, done things, and this is a very long story, like, and so I won't dive into my personal history as far as this goes, but I was in a place where I didn't have any credit. So for me to think that a business plan would make a bank take me seriously, like, I just didn't know what I didn't know. But I will say that I had a vision board, and that's something that I've always done. And the business plan helped put my vision board into words, and words are so powerful. I mentioned that I'm a journaler. So for me to take my vision, to take what I wanted, to take my heart's desire, and to really break it down into a 30-page plan, it's been really helpful in so many ways. Not only to see how it deviated from that plan, but to see the number of ways that my business plan has actually, it's been almost prophetic, like things that I put in the plan where I knew that someday I wanted this to happen or I wanted that to happen. I can go back to that plan that I wrote in 2004 and think, wow, this is actually happening. We had a period of time where we were doing open mic nights really frequently in the town. And, you know, that was something in my business plan that didn't actually manifest for 5 years. I had been open for 5 years before we actually started doing those open mic nights. And I happened to be flipping through it because I do that on occasion and obviously try to make changes. And it's, you know, it was just so fun to see that. Another thing that we knew that we wanted to have a local college, we wanted to really connect with the college and the students. So then when we finally, 3 years later opened the coffee bar, and then probably 3 years after that, where we finally became that hub for students, it was just a really, you know, it took a lot of work. It was not a fun thing to do necessarily, but it was a discipline that I think has definitely paid off, not in ways that I thought it would, which was funding through a bank, but just for me personally on my business journey, to have that plan mapped out and then to see what has worked, what hasn't worked, and what I've sort of manifested just through writing it down and trying to put a plan in action.
So how did you know to do that? Had you taken any courses or did you read any books on how to do it?
So I have been an entrepreneurial book junkie forever. Like I'm always reading business books and growth books. And so I'm sure at the time, it was so long ago, I don't remember exactly, but I'm sure it was a book that I had read on how to format it. I don't know that I would have formatted. I don't know that I would recommend formatting it in the same way to others at this point, and I haven't. But I do think having a plan and having a vision are incredibly important. Having your vision and breaking down your plan are incredibly important. My business plan was geared towards, I was trying to have a bank pay attention to the value of my proposed business. I will say it helped though, because I was able to present it to my landlord, who at the time didn't understand why I would make him read 30 pages of my business plan. And I did it because I wanted him to believe in me. I was coming to him sort of as kind of off the street. He didn't know who I was at the time. We'd only lived in the town for a couple of years at that point. And again, I mentioned that I'm a bit of an introvert. So most of my work was done at home. I wasn't really involved in the community, and he had this space available that I was going to be renting, but I knew that my vision was bigger than what that space would allow for. So it was important to me to have him read my plan and to understand where I was headed. And it was incredible that I asked him to do that, because 2 years later he came up to me and he said, Alyssa, we're moving out of the train station and we're building a new hardware store. And Sandy and I, after reading your business plan, we think that our train station would be perfect for your vision. And he was completely right. In 2008, we were able to move into the train station, and that's where we were able to have the coffee bar aspect, which was so important for me, for the community that I wanted to build within Apotheca. So it was a reminder to listen to that, to intuition. I felt sort of foolish asking him to read it, but at the same time, I knew it was really important to me that he did. So I think stepping into that discomfort or that awkwardness and going out on a limb just because you've got that still small voice telling you to do it, I think it's important.
Yeah. Again, there's so much I want to ask you in relation to that, but I do, since you just brought that up, can you explain how you have learned? I mean, you obviously have a great practice, it is a part of who you are now, like you said, of just tuning into yourself and being in silence and knowing how to receive design ideas and inspiration. Is that how you tune into your intuition as well? And how do you know when to trust it? Because you touched upon this earlier too, in terms of your business, I agree with you wholeheartedly on the plan and the vision. And then how do you know also to stay open to what the business wants to become? So I know that became a longer question. Mm-hmm. So I'll break it down to two.
That's okay.
One, your intuition, how do you know when to trust that? And then we can weave it back to how do you know when to do that within a business setting that's already established?
So intuition, a lot of it is trial and error, but you have to, even when it doesn't go in a way that you anticipate, it's easy to stop trusting yourself. I've definitely done that. I had, in fact, a business partnership that was really, really toxic and really terrible. And it took a long time for me to heal from that and to trust my intuition again. But I think it's important to line up a decision. If you feel you're being pulled into something, you have to line it up with your values. And of course, in order to line something up with your values, you have to know what your values are, and you have to take them incredibly seriously. For me, I have to take this into consideration when we're building our team. I have to take this into consideration when I'm saying yes to a client and when we're moving forward on a business decision. Does this line up with my values? Is this adding to the life that I want to live in those very core base ways? And if it's not, even if it seems like a good opportunity, you have to pass it up. And also not making decisions based on fear. And that's basically how I ended up getting into a situation that was really terrible. And totally truthfully, it almost brought me to a place where I had to start from scratch after working on my business for over a decade. I almost lost everything. And I always learn lessons the hard way. But the thing is, when you learn a lesson the hard way, it sticks. And for me, if you find yourself in a place of fear and you think you're making a decision because of that fear, you need to just like walk the other direction, because stepping into something that's comforting or feels super secure, usually there's a false sense of security in that. Usually it's the discomfort. It's the trusting in yourself and your abilities. That's where the growth lies and that's where the magic lies.
So are you saying run towards the fear?
So I'm saying run towards, I think, discomfort. So just to give a little bit more background to what I'm saying, I started doubting myself. I was in a situation where my ex-husband had moved to Texas. We're here in New Hampshire, so that's very far away. My parents had moved back to Minnesota. So I was in a place where I, as a single mom with my business, was essentially alone. And I started feeling very fearful, and I latched on to a person that, even though in my spirit I knew we weren't in alignment, because I felt that she could help me and I stopped trusting myself, I made decisions that I should not have made based on fear and based on doubting myself and my abilities. And the result was, many years of, difficulty, and then having to break that partnership and coming to the point of almost losing everything. Wow. So I think had I leaned into the discomfort of being alone and trusting myself within that is a different kind of fear. Yeah. There's some self-doubt. I don't know what's going to happen. Am I good enough? Can I really do this? I don't have a bankroll. I don't have, I started focusing on what I didn't have and my lack of abilities and the fear that kind of welled up because of that. That's one kind of fear. But you know, and that's what I should have leaned into. Yes, I'm afraid, but this is my path, and I have faith in myself, and I can do this. Instead, I made a decision because of that fear and went the other way into a sense of false security. So, and I think that we all probably can think of instances in our lives where we've made a decision and moved towards something that we thought was security, moved away from the growth, and then we learned the hard way that was the wrong move. So that being said, it was a bit of a process, but I also had a history of making good decisions. I had a history of my intuition being something that steered me in the right direction. And I also knew that I wasn't listening to my intuition when I made the wrong decision.
Yes.
And when you make a bouquet,
I was going to say that when sometimes the best way to learn how to follow your intuition is to ignore it the first time. And then you start to realize, oh yeah, this, I've been here before and I chose this way before. Now I'm going to go ahead and trust the intuition this time.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. That is very true. And as far as knowing what decision to make with your business and the shape that your business takes, when we're making bouquets, you know, there's a way that you weave the flowers in together, and you have a tendency to want to, people that are just learning, they have a tendency to want to grip the bouquet and really hold it in place and just try to keep things where they want them to be. When in reality, you want to gently weave and work with the shape and the natural contour and flow of each flower. And you're creating a grid that basically supports itself. But essentially, the bouquet will determine its shape based on those decisions and how it's working together as a whole. And I feel like your business becomes the same way. You gently weave decisions in that support your purpose, support your reason for existing, but that shape is going to change. That shape's going to be different than you maybe originally intended. And your job as a steward of your business is to keep guiding. You know, you keep it along its path, but you don't squelch it. You don't squeeze it and force it into the shape you think it's supposed to have. So I feel like that has been my business approach, and that's how I have grown Apotheca, and definitely made wrong decisions along the way, but I've been able to get it back on track when I have made wrong decisions. I've been able to get it back on track by just coming back to gently holding it, guiding it, and remembering what its purpose is.
Oh, what a beautiful way to run a business. Thank you. You have just inspired me so much more. I already feel better, Alyssa. I already feel better.
Well, good.
As the podcast hostess. But you've mentioned this too. I just want to quickly pause and ask you, what are your values? So when you're saying that you're doing a check-in, and I assume, and you are inspiring me to do this as well, you have this written down. Like, you know your mm-hmm. mission. You know mm-hmm. who you're here to serve, what you're hoping for them to experience in the presence of mm-hmm. your business, and you know your values. So do you mind sharing them with us?
Yeah. So our values are acknowledge, uplift, inspire, and impact. And, you know, I have an amazing business coach, and she has tried to encourage me to get it down to three. But for me, impact is a relatively new, it's a new addition. And for me, impact is actually, it's bringing into focus the fact that our business has to make money in order to have the impact that we want to have on our community, and my family's life, and the lives of my employees. It's incredibly important that we continue to be a profitable, viable business. So that's a new one for us just this year. But acknowledge, uplift, inspire, it's all about the way that we want to treat human beings when they come into our presence, when they come into our space, whether we're in Apotheca or just the way we are moving about the world. We want to acknowledge the beauty in each other. We want to acknowledge the importance found in one another, in everyone. So when somebody comes into Apotheca, we want to say hello. You know, we bring that into a tangible, we greet them, we acknowledge them, we make a point to let them know that we see them and that we're grateful that they're there. And then the uplift is just the tone of our space and our environment, whether it's our working environment as a team or the way that we treat and interact with our customers. We want to edify and lift one another up. Doesn't mean we're perfect. That doesn't mean we don't have bad days, but we want to make sure that we're keeping ourselves accountable to that edification and that being positive, no toxicity, no gossip, making sure that we're creating a loving, nurturing environment. And then the inspiration that comes down to, you know, flowers, plants, beauty. Beauty impacts our lives in amazing ways. And someone, I know for myself, I remember the first time, so my parents, we didn't spend money on frivolous things. That's just not the kind of life we had. But I remember as a young teenager buying an empty wooden box. And it was only after my friend was like, Alyssa, if you love it, you need to buy it. And I had the practical voice of my mother inside my head saying, you don't need this. You could make this. But there was something about the box. So I spent the $17 and I bought the box and it changed the course of my day. And it became something that my best friend and I like put something, some coffee beans in it because I knew I wanted to have a coffee shop someday. And it was an object that was with me and still is with me that just held a lot of meaning for me. And I think about that when I'm choosing objects with my team and my team, you know, is choosing gifts to carry in the shop. We want to be carrying things that are potentially impactful and inspiring for our customers. And then the space itself, we want to make sure that the space itself is something that people feel, you know, they feel in their spirit, they feel in their bones. We want it to make them leave feeling like they want to create a space in their own home that feels the way that our space feels, you know, obviously in their own way. But the inspiration piece is really important as well. And then, you know, circling back to impact. You got to make money to stay in business. So it's okay as a business owner to focus on profitability because that's how you'll have the impact.
Yes. I was going to ask you in the beginning, which you sort of addressed related to the business plan, how did you ultimately get funding to have your first brick and mortar space?
I didn't. My brother let me use his credit card and I bought $5,000 worth of inventory and just kept kept feeding it back into the business. I mean, it is kind of a miracle that I was able from that $5,000 to create a seven-figure business. And I think part of it is because I didn't have a safety net or a back door or an escape route. You know, it wasn't even a thought. I knew that this was something.
There
was no plan B. This was it. This was a way that I could raise my children and build a business and support them and fulfill my spirit as a maker, as someone who needed to make things and put it into the world. Like I knew that I had to keep doing that. And because of the business I had and have, I've been able to pitch a tent for my kids and have them sleep and make it into a fun adventure while I finish up funeral arrangements or wedding work for the next day. Right now we have a design house that we do a lot of. We do, you know, much larger scale weddings now than we used to do. We have a fort that Pierre has built, the love of my life, who I met at Apotheca. He's built a fort for the girls here. So they are able to hang out and play and be creative while we're being creative. And they're just part of our business and part of our lives. It's not separate. My daughter, who's 15, works in the shop. You know, she's obviously grown up in the shop and she works. She delivers weddings with us. My son, he's had enough though. He's 18 and he comes in to get flowers for his girlfriend. Every once in a while, he'll come have dinner with the team now and then. But for the most part, he's not in a whole lot. But yeah.
So you made all of this work with $5,000. And this is interesting to me with what you just shared. I would think that most moms, single moms with two kids, would lean towards the direction of the most secure thing for me to do is not to start my own business, but to go mm-hmm. get a job somewhere, right? Is that fair mm-hmm. to say?
I mean, I think most people would think that for sure. For me, having my kids in daycare was not, first of all, it wasn't financially feasible. And it's not something that was okay with me. I was coming from, you know, and my mindset has changed now, but who I was at that time, I was really nervous about daycare and not having my kids with me. And I felt I was still working through my value as you know, I was a failed wife. You know, I was working through that. I needed to be a good mom. And, you know, now, in fact, right now our girls are with a babysitter, but, you know, I'm now very different, but with who I was back then, my only option was figuring out a way to be a mother and support them. And I had to do both of those things. And my family at the time was my parents lived close, so they were able to help, you know, drop them off or pick them up or, you know, do things like that for me, which was great. And in the very beginning, the first couple of years, my ex-husband still lived close. So it wasn't until 3 years later when it was really like, wow, I am totally in this solo. But yeah.
And that was the time that you leaned on the business partner. So there was that.
Yeah. That's when it wasn't a partnership at first. I just thought that someone was willing to help me. Yeah. And I was very just naive and not really, I was just kind of stupid. If I'm being totally honest, I was being really stupid.
Be nice to my friend Alyssa. This is her first time on a podcast.
Sorry. I'm sure I'm not supposed to say things like that on the podcast.
I'm just teasing about that. I mean, I went through my own partnership closing. I mean, I think partnerships are they're really challenging, and mm-hmm. you have to almost go through them to learn how to do one better or decide that you won't do one again in the near future. Mm-hmm. I think people are very lucky if they come together and they really grow together and, mm-hmm. you know, but I think it's a whole other level of navigating a business with someone else. I mean, there's a reason that people just find a relationship challenging because there's a lot of ups and downs and growing. And then if you mix a partnership, a financial partnership and all of that happening at the same time, it's a recipe for intense learning, shall we? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the values, it's as I hear you speak and knowing your values, and also thank you for sharing those with us. Yeah. I do see that that is so important to you that there was just no question in your mind. Like you were saying, you knew, okay, I'm going to be here as a mom. And so this is what's going to have to work. Like you just decided mm-hmm. that it was going to work, and you are here 15 years later. And so there was a part of your intuition that you followed, or you followed your intuition, not a part of it, but all of it, to really build something so incredible. I literally want to get on a plane and come and visit you right now. I realize we get too far in, where exactly is it? Should someone be nearby and they want to pull over right now and go have coffee at Coffee? So, where is it in New Hampshire?
So we're in Goffstown, New Hampshire, and it's about 10 minutes from Manchester and an hour north of Boston.
Oh, I love New Hampshire. It is so pretty.
It is. It's a great state. I love it as well.
Let's talk about, now that you have all of this business acumen and you have this passion for wanting to build community and support others, and primarily support others in business, how did you discover that you have that passion of wanting to help other women in particular, also open their own flower shops if that's something they're wanting? I mean, you are at a place where you're building, you're really pivoting a little and building out a whole new arm to your business in support of, well, filling out the impact part of your values. I know there isn't really a question there, Alyssa, but how did you know that you wanted to lean towards the direction of teaching?
So I'm just so grateful to flowers. I'm grateful to the business of flowers. And I feel that it's because of them that I was able to support my kids. It's because of them that I was able to create a business that supports my desire to create and make an impact on my customers. And there's also a clear path. You know, it is very possible for people to make money with flowers. So I think that I found myself in a place where I wanted to share that with people. And it's, you know, we're in a world that can be looked at as very competitive. You know, there are people that feel like there are so many people doing what I'm doing, or everyone is copying me, or what if people copy me? And I had a year when my partnership was finally ending. It was a really incredibly rough year for me because I was so emotionally vulnerable. And I had some team members leave, and I just let some negative thoughts take over. And I handled their leaving as a personal rejection rather than being able to celebrate them and their on their own artistic path, and looking at it as, you know what, how beautiful that someone was able to spend time with me in my space and to then go into their own lives with a new direction, a new way to pursue their creativity. So for me, it took a lot of work being able to flip. And I think, again, because I was in a vulnerable place, and but I knew who I wanted to be in that moment. I knew that I wanted to be that person that could celebrate and support my team member for leaving and wanting to start their own flower business. And that was something that's always been with me. And this, again, I don't know how we are on time, but this goes back to one of the first art shows I went to, and I met an artist who was interested. He was doing a medium that I had been interested in. I met two artists that were doing image transfers, and it was something that I was so intrigued by. I talked to the first person. She wouldn't tell me anything. She was a closed book. And right away I was like, wow, like she doesn't want to share anything with me. And I felt so deflated. And then a couple rows over, I met this other person who was doing it. And he was so incredibly excited about what he was doing. He couldn't help but overflow and share his process. And I left that art festival, and I said out loud, that is the kind of artist I want to be. I want to be an artist that inspires others, that makes them feel that they can do it too. And that was, you know, when we're again looking back on our lives at these moments that we extract that become so powerful, how I handled those employees like leaving to do their own thing, that was so out of alignment with who I wanted to be. And because of me almost being disgusted with myself and not being able to just celebrate them the way that I wanted to, it really pushed me headfirst into myself and looking at that and understanding how I could completely be that person that has always been within me, and to completely live that life. And the way to do that is to very on purpose share what I know and share how it's affected my life for the good and impacted my life for the good. My kids have grown up watching their mom being an entrepreneur, and my son has his own business, and my daughter, you know, she's incredibly creative and she's independent and she's a go-getter. And I see how it's been a positive thing for my entire family. And I want that for other people. Of course, there's a part of me that has a soft spot for that single mom who's maybe, you know, finding herself in the same place that I was in. But I have this group of amazing women in my Botanical Business Society, which is the name of my group of lovely flower loving entrepreneurs. And, you know, it runs the gamut. They're not all moms, but they are people that are so excited about pursuing this creative path in their lives. And, you know, one is wanting to get out of her corporate job. Another, you know, has been going through a lot of health issues, and she knows that this is something that she can manage. The thing with a flower business is you don't have to have a storefront. There are so many different ways that you can bring a business of flowers into your life, whether it's through events, whether it's through pop-ups, whether it's through farmers markets. You know, there are people, I have one member who's opening a flower trailer, a flower cart, so it'll be portable and she'll be able to take it to festivals in different places. It's something that can really take on a shape that fits within your life and your needs. And I think it's really unique in that way because of that.
Alyssa,
did I answer the question?
You're inspiring me to want to have flower art my business. Wait a minute. Oh, wait, I have to mute Alexa because she thinks she's Alyssa. Forgive Alexa. The ambient noise. I told Alyssa I mostly don't edit these. We just keep it real in the studio. And Pepita was shaking her collar, and Alexa, she is now muted.
People and are... Alyssa was rambling. So,
no. No, Alyssa is great. No, I have to hold back to not want to interrupt the flow of your thoughts because you're just, what do we say? You're dropping so many knowledge bombs. I hope everyone listening is really able to, you probably re-listen to different parts of this and really take it in, because I'm just so happy that a business owner like you is offering to lead other business owners, because just the language that you use around just the awareness that you have, I don't know how to articulate this very well, but you're doing and you've done so much work on getting yourself not only to this place within your business, but just so much clarity about how you want to share your work and what you've learned with the world. And I feel like that kind of thoughtfulness in a mentor is one of the most powerful gifts that you can have. Or I know you called yourself a guide. It's just, your Botanical Business Society is really lucky to have you. And our workshop attendees are going to be incredibly lucky to spend a couple of days with you as well. It's just, it's very, you should know, this being your first podcast, it's very inspiring. Half the time I feel for my listeners sometimes, because I have the most wonderful souls that come on here and talk with me. And I'm always just sitting here in awe of the message that gets shared through this medium, and just how much heart there is in so many creative people I talk to mostly. There's just so much good intention and so many wonderful things happening in the space. And I don't know why I feel inspired to touch upon that right now, but I think it can feel easy to get disheartened. And when we have those moments where maybe we've also felt betrayed, or we have just been disappointed, or we feel alone, or we feel like, can we really do this? I just remind you, if you are listening and going through that at all right now, that there are people out there who want nothing more genuinely to help you and to support you. And I don't know if you feel this way, Alyssa, but I do feel like that's growing in the minds of more business owners. It didn't feel like when I was first in becoming an entrepreneur almost 20 years ago, that people were as willing to mentor. Although I correct myself, because I was trying to start a business in the tech space and in Boulder, Colorado, and a lot of those people actually opened up a fair amount and would try to mentor people. But the difference was that they had made it on some level financially. They weren't necessarily even building businesses anymore. So I think it takes a lot of strength and awareness to be someone in a business. So technically you are helping people that could be a quote unquote competitor to you, and to still have, you know, to still believe that there really is. I mean, that's walking the walk of there is enough to go around for all of us. And I do believe that we are coming to embrace that more rather than just give lip service to it. So I just want to say thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. Definitely. I think that there's a tendency to feel threatened and to fully step into the, and I can't remember who first said this, but the world is not a pie to be divided. You know, we live in a very abundant world, and we all have people as business owners and as artists, we all have people that we are meant to impact, and those people don't go away. You know, it's not like there are only so many people wanting to be positively impacted by your work, and if you don't get to them first, someone else will. That's not reality. That's not the way it is. When you step up and you're willing to be vulnerable and share yourself with others and share your work with others, the exact people that you're meant to impact are going to be found by you. But it takes you showing up and you being available, being vulnerable, being seen, your work being seen, in order for that to happen.
And being consistent, right? Showing up. regularly. Yeah. And obviously if you have a storefront, that is something that you have to do. Well, I know people can do that also according to their schedule, but are you open 7 days a week or five?
We're open 7 days a week.
You are.
So we're open. Yeah, we are. Yep. So we also have a coffee bar, and you know, talking back to the understanding what to let go in your business, the coffee bar, that was something that was such a huge part of my purpose because of the impact in the community and just wanting that connection. But as the wedding portion of our business began to grow, and as I wanted to pursue these other avenues of bringing creatives together through our design house space and through Botanical Business Society, I knew that I had to let the cafe portion go. So we actually have someone else managing the cafe so it's within our space. So it's still under the umbrella of Apotheca, but someone else is in managing the coffee bar itself within our space. And that was really difficult. I had a lot of pride that I had to work through. I had a lot of, you know, feelings of ownership, but I knew that it was better for the business for me to let that go so that I could focus on these other pieces that were more in alignment with where I was currently and with what the mission of our business is.
Yeah. Would you like to talk a little bit about the design house that you already are currently working on, and did letting go of the coffee shop sort of transition into this part of the design house where you're able to establish community more here?
Yeah, so it was just really acknowledging the fact that May through October, I was basically MIA for my cafe team. And it's important for me to be a good leader. And I felt like I wasn't able to be a good leader for them because I was so immersed in flowers. And so that's really what led me, you know, there were some other factors too, but that was a big part of me deciding that I needed to let that go and bring in another company to manage that. And as I, you know, accepted that reality, we ended up really looking at our wedding business and knowing that in order to function properly, we needed more space. So we ended up renting a warehouse space that we now call the design house. And right from the beginning, we've shared it with some other businesses that have come into the space. And we're now stepping into very actively inviting other artists and makers into the space to use it as a collaborative creative community. So we have some photographers, we have a cake decorator, we have a handful, we have someone who does furniture with Annie's Own Chalk Paint. So we have a handful of people. And then we have a realtor who, believe it or not, is one of the most creative people I've ever met. She owned a yoga studio, and she's amazing. So bringing together, whether they're actual artists or they just go about their businesses in a very artful manner that's focused on, you know, people and impact and adding to our community in a positive way, we want to really embrace the idea of having a space where people can collaborate. They can still work quietly if they want, but there's something really comforting sometimes with just being in a room with other people. Even if you had your headphones on and your head down, and you're working on your stuff, we are created to be communal beings. You know, we need community, we need connection, we need contact with one another. And that's our vision for this space is, you know, it's not only for our flower production, but it will also be opened up to other creatives.
I love
that.
It
came about as I let the cafe go and thought about what our Apotheca wedding portion of the business needed. That's what allowed for this. So as you let something go, as you're saying no to something, you are saying yes to something else. So, you know, there is always the other side of things.
Can you come to LA and build your business here?
Well, I can't wait to come to LA and play the flowers with you.
So if you don't know yet, Alyssa and I are co-hosting a workshop of flowers, floral design, and painting inspired by the floral design, and good food and business talk, because on the third day, you can attend one or ideally come for all 3 days, because we also have a branding photographer that will be included in the 3 days, which is, as entrepreneurs, we're like, that's amazing. The workshop is wonderful, and that is such an amazing bonus because we all need imagery of what we're doing for our marketing, whole other topics. But there will be a business brunch as well, and it's going to be a really intimate gathering, and it's just, I cannot wait. I know it's going to be incredibly, I feel like I'm using the word beautiful umpteen million times, but it's just no other way. Yeah, there's no other way to describe it. I just think it's going to be a beautiful gathering because you and I will be writing mine down now very specifically, but we connect because we share such similar values, and so we're going to be creating a space that will be very, all the things Alyssa said and more, very welcoming and inviting, because it's so important for me too, for people to arrive and just feel instantly welcomed, and like you said at the very beginning, just feel better for being there. And we also share this passion of what it means to be cross-disciplinary artisans, you know, that really one kind of creativity always feeds another kind of creativity. Many times it feels as if people, they used to come to me and say, well, how do I have to pick one discipline, or how do I decide which one to focus on? And to which I always say, do whatever you enjoy. And obviously, if you're in business, you'll lean towards one. But just as you're this wonderful example of this as well, everything that you do influences the other discipline and inspires it. And how, you know, when we were coming together, putting this workshop together and thinking about how would this really support creative business owners, it's just this opportunity to work potentially in a completely, because we have floral designers coming who maybe have never painted before, and painters who've never done floral design before. We have a photographer coming who, she was telling me, she just really wants to work with her hands again. And it just adds so much to life. Let's just be honest. It adds so much to your life, a richness to your life. And then how that can really refill, as you were saying so beautifully, refill your well creatively, because it's easy. And I know I don't want to keep you forever. You can also get kind of burnt out with all of this, and there's a lot that you're juggling, and it's so important to make time to come together, not only to fulfill the community part of everything you've been sharing, to just really be creative with a group of people, but also to have moments to feed your creativity, especially as a business owner, where it can get very lopsided on the other direction. Does that sound like a good overview, Alyssa?
I mean, absolutely. And I feel like, you know, we have creative muscles, and when we're used to working with a certain medium, you know, we're using these muscles over and over again. And when we do switch to something else, even for me with flowers, you know, I'm creating designs for weddings, I'm creating designs for events, and it's really important for me to shift and to just do something for no reason at all, just to do something to remind myself that, you know, I can just make something just because. And I'm also a painter and a maker, and I feel that one feeds the other. And, you know, we end up, when we get, we make grooves in our creative tracks. And if we don't encourage ourselves to deviate and to expand and to find that fuel in other ways, then we can get really uninspired, and we can just sort of forget how to make something out of nothing. Or we start to just to feel it like it's not as exciting. So I do think the cross-disciplinary stuff is really important for that. So I totally agree with what you're saying.
I'm so glad. So if it's not all sold out because it's starting to fill up, we absolutely invite you to join us. And as with all episodes, I'll have all of the links in the show notes. And well, Alyssa, I know you'll be back to talk to us more about what it's like to continue to grow the size business you have. I'm always asking seven-figure entrepreneurs in a calendar year, I mean, what does that what does that feel like? And I know this is a big question that we don't have to fully go into, but what does that feel like, and how do you juggle all of that?
So there is no way to juggle it. And I think that, you know, that has been the lesson for me the past few years. The only way to make it work is to become a better leader. And that's especially 2019, you know, that's what I just poured myself into, because it is impossible to juggle. You have to rely on a team. And if you want to continue producing, you know, work that you're proud of and creating the impact that you want, like the positive impact on your customers' lives and, you know, the growth and impact within your business, you have to build and rely on a team. And I'm incredibly proud of my team. I have a team that cares so much. And so my job is to make sure that they're okay and that they can do their job, that they understand the expectations that I have for them. They understand our purpose, our mission, and, you know, how we're going to accomplish those little mini missions that all support the big mission, you know, the reason why we exist. And ultimately our, you know, you asked earlier about our mission statement, and our mission statement is that Apothic is a space committed to inspiration, to never underestimating the power of kindness, and to seeing and sharing the tiny bits of life that matter most. So, you know, ultimately that's what drives us. And we do that, you know, through the Acknowledge, Uplift, Inspire impact. And my job as business owner is to be the best leader I can be for my team, so we can keep doing, you know, the work that we're here to do.
Now, can I come and work for you, Elizabeth? It's a whole skill set to be a good leader. I am learning as well that it's just this is the part that I didn't know. That's why thank you for answering that so eloquently. I just, you know, when you bootstrap something with your $5,000, yeah. Same for me, you just start building something. I did not have a plan. I actually wrote a business plan for funding for possibly to have investors in my first business. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'm never doing that again. But it was so formulaic. There was no soul to it. And so I never wrote one for Creative Thursday. And I'm really at this stage, I'm right behind you I had my first website 16 years ago, but really celebrating, you know, 13 years of making a living as an artist and a number of years, 16 years total. I'm coming back to a place of, oh, well, you had this vision of growing, but in order to do that, I didn't know. I mean, you have to have a team. Yes. And you have to learn how to relinquish control and be an amazing leader to your team and support people in truly finding their strengths and flourishing within your business, within their strengths, and developing processes and systems that support all of that. And I think until I got serious about having more of a vision and deciding that, yes, I want to go this direction for all these reasons, that's when I started to learn what you're sharing here. And I think for people now who are just beginning to start their business, that these are the things that people like us who are out ahead of them can say, go ahead and do that now. I mean, you can always change your plan, but allow yourself to dream to the seven-figure and beyond mark in the creative business field. And when in doing so, know that it's going to be bigger than you. You know, that it's going mm-hmm. to be, as you said, your business is going to have its own existence and being fluid and allowing that to unfold while also really getting yourself to a place to invite people to be part of that dream with you. And mm-hmm. so we get to invite people to think about that, even if they just, you know, put their shingle up, so to speak.
Yeah. And I mean, I have to say, just so I don't give the illusion that I'm a fantastic leader, I'm learning to be. You know, and I feel like you learn to be a better leader by being a bad leader. But, you know, when you realize that you just like, messed up.
It's kind of like the intuition thing. If you don't follow it, you learn.
Right.
And yes, right. You're a bad leader. You kind of learn to be a better one. It's a little bit the hard way. But don't you think there's really some of this you just, it's just part of the growing pains of being a business owner. And Alyssa and I are here. I keep saying that. I'm like, I'm here to help make a lot of that easier than it was for me, because I didn't have anybody. And there were so many people that didn't know the online space in particular. But some of the growing pains are just a part of your own development. It would be, as you would know, like raising your kids. You can't do all of the growing up for them as much as you want to protect them. They have to learn.
I think for creatives, there's a unique problem, you know, a unique problem to overcome with growing our businesses. And that's our creative ego. You know, I think we get really hung up on our process, and we feel a lot of ownership over our process and the way we do something. And that, you know, we can't, there's a saying that I love, that's basically talking about how you can completely expect your team to read your mind if you write it down. You know, put what's in your mind and write it down. I think that's a Brooke Castillo thing. But in order to write down what's in your mind, you have to think about it and develop a process, and, you know, find a framework for your team to work within. And I think we can get really hung up on, well, I'm the creator, or I'm the designer, or no one can do this like I can. When in reality, your goal should be to create a team that's actually better than you are, that does things better than you, or together you're better. So I think that, you know, that can be a hindrance for creative business owners. We need to get out of our own way and really build our team up to become, to allow them to be better than we are, so that our business can become better.
Yes. Yes. And yes, again, I appreciate it. I appreciate all of your thoughts. Is there one thing in particular, something maybe that we didn't cover, or something that you would like to leave with someone who is an artist or starting their business, or even more established and going through a pivot? Is there something that comes to mind that you'd like to share with them as we close our conversation today?
I think really it comes down to connection. And I'm speaking as an introvert. So my heart goes out to other introvert artists who are trying to find ways to grow. And I basically crafted a life where I have a retail store. So that meant that I had to get out of my own introvert way and every day show up in a space where I was there to serve my customers. A lot of artists are going to be creating in quiet places, and they're going to be trying to find growth within their quiet places, listening to podcasts, reading books, you know, all wonderful things that I have done, but nothing can replace actual connection with other human beings. So finding ways, you know, joining a networking group, finding mentors, finding peers, you know, people that you can learn from that can keep you encouraged, and to just pull ourselves out of the isolation or out of our feigned idea of connection. Because sometimes I swear I'm friends with these people that I listen to on podcasts, and then I remember that they don't actually necessarily know me as a human being. But if you have the opportunity to connect with inspiring people and get to know them, you know, and have them get to know you, that is fuel and food that just, you know, that lasts such a long time. And it's so important to us as makers and to us as human beings.
You're listening to Creative Thursday, recorded and produced by me, Marisa. You can find all things Creative Thursday at creativethursday.com and creativethursdaycourses.com. Don't forget to learn more and join us quickly, soon, even though it's virtual, spaces are limited, at our virtual floral design and painting workshop happening May 2nd. It is live. There will be a replay available if for some reason you do miss us live, although I highly encourage you to come and join us because it's going to be such a fun time. And you can get all the details and register to join us at bit.ly/virtualfloral. And if you haven't used a bit.ly link before, you do that http://... and then just drop the bit.ly/virtualfloral into your browser, and you should find it that way. It will also be posted at my websites, and you can find all things Alyssa at apotheca So APOTHECA flower shop, and then it's SHOPPE for shop. So apothecaflowershop.com. And you can also find Alyssa on Instagram. She's a really prolific Instagrammer, always inspiring, beautiful photographs, beautiful message at Apotheca Flowers. So all one word, APOTHECAFLOWERS. We can't wait to create with you. And until next time, take good care, friends. Thanks so much for listening.